1, 2, 3. I'm Dee Mae Roberts, Stage and Studio. We're featuring music from 45th Parallel Universe. The organization had concerts planned and then decided to go virtual every Friday, so they produce a live concert. It's called Portland Social Distance Ensemble. You can find out more at 45thparallelpdx.org. We're going to hear about 45th Parallel shortly, and in the latter part of the show, we're featuring a new film by World Stage Theater that was live-streamed recently at the virtual Vanport Mosaic Festival. It's called Growing Up Black in Oregon. We'll hear some powerful excerpts, so stay tuned. This is Stage and Studio. I'm Dee Mae Roberts, Stage and Studio. With me via Zoom is Ron Blessinger, Interim Executive Director of 45th Parallel. Hey, Ron, it's been a long time. How are you?
I'm well, Dee Mae. Nice to hear you and to see you via Zoom.
Yeah, it's been a long time because the last time we talked, you were the Artistic Director, I believe, of Third Angle. And so that was for 17 years.
That was for the Parks event that we did as part of the Halpern Park sequence. That was a big public event. And yeah. So.
Oh, you remember the interview. That's awesome.
I do. Of course I do.
Well, you created commissions and a recording label. What are some of the projects you take pride in at Third Angle?
Well, all of that. We produced over a dozen commercial recordings and commissioned hundreds of pieces. And the thing that I've carried with me into 45th Parallel mostly is this idea of context, having fun with the way that the table is set for listening to music, especially when it comes to environment. The fact is, in my experience, people hear music differently depending on what environment they're in, and I'm just really intensely curious about that. With 45th Parallel lately, we've had a lot of fun with a project we did recently with Glowbox, a wonderful virtual reality interactive technical firm in town. We created a virtual venue. Did that at PICA, where with a brilliant artwork of Brad Johnson, we created a place where the audience could see the projected artwork and see through the screen to see the players too. And it was just a magical way of creating visual context for that performance. And as fate would have it, that subject of virtual experience was a fateful, we had no idea what we were in store for just weeks later with the onset of the pandemic. So it was, it was timely for sure.
Like many organizations, you've had to pivot.
Yeah.
And you came up with a new project every week, a new online performance, which we're going to talk about shortly. But I also want to find out how 45th Parallel came to be.
Well, 45th Parallel was founded 10 years ago by my colleague, actually 11 years now, by my colleague Greg Ewer. We're violinists in the Oregon Symphony. And Greg is a phenomenal musician and really active, creative mind and a great creative presence in Portland. Very active with... There's a lot of us that are in this kind of chamber music community that exists in our living rooms a lot. And for Greg, was fond of describing 45th Parallel as bringing chamber music culture from our living rooms onto the stage. And in Greg's case, Greg's interests are so varied from Baroque music to jazz music. 45th Parallel traditionally has always been about a community of players and representing the varied interests that all these players bring to the table. And so we've carried that forward in the projects that we do and with 45th Parallel. And this, you'll see this in the Friday night concerts and everything that we do. It covers a tremendous range of music from Baroque music to contemporary music. And 45th Parallel has always been a musician-led effort in that way.
And how long have you been interim executive director?
This is my going on my third year.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's been a real joy. You know, my colleagues, it's really all about colleagues, it's all about friends, you know, friends chipping in, having really creative ideas. And you know, it's not surprising, I suppose, that we are nimble enough that we can pivot in such a quick way. You know, the Friday night concerts, actually, I mean, this is really a gift to us by Danny Rosenberg, our dear friend, who created this technology that allows us to collaborate from our houses. I mean, and what a gift. Everybody that we've worked with and had fun experimenting with all say the same thing. You know, we've missed playing with our friends, and this is an opportunity to play with our friends and actually make new friends, because it's not limited to the Portland area, but it can be with anybody really around the world.
Well, in case you just joined us, I'm Dee Mae Roberts, stage and studio via Zoom with Ron Blessinger, Interim Executive Director of 45th Parallel Universe. And I'd like to bring in Danny Rosenberg to this conversation. Now, I've heard and watched quite a few live stream concerts, and sound is often a bit of a problem. I mean, you know, it's not horrible, and some of it sounds really great, but your online concerts have, I've been impressed by the audio quality. I'd like to talk about how they're done. So, Danny Rosenberg, you are a technical volunteer and probably wear many hats. As a friend to classical music, do you want to talk about the app that you created, or what did you create?
Well, it's more or less a venue for, just like Ron said, people being able to play together in real time online, with a real focus on being able to hear each other and get, like you said, decent sound quality out of the thing. And we went through a lot of trial and error trying to figure out the best way to do this. I think back around, mid-March, I just kind of flippantly said to Ron, you know, this is when the orchestra, the symphony was being furloughed and everybody was trying to figure out what they're going to do with themselves. And I just said, off the top of my head, why don't you just form the Portland Social Distance Ensemble and let's figure out a way to do this from home. And one thing I've learned about Ron is, any flippant comment I make, he'll take seriously and run with. So that turned into what we're doing now. And we've gone through, we had a lot of fits and starts trying to figure out how to get it going. But once we did, it turned into it went from being a fun experiment to, oh, let's do this every Friday night.
Well, can you walk us through, I guess, some of those experiments and how, you know, I'm always interested in it, not just being a technical person myself, but also for other groups, you know, that might want to, you know, learn and adapt and try something new. So you want to walk us through some of how you got to the point where of being able to play in tandem, you know, from different places?
I think what we originally tried was using a program called OBS, which is like an open broadcast program for live streaming. And live streaming person A to person B to person C. And it turns out, I think that what I learned from that is that the range of technical ability of musicians ranges from very, very good to almost non-existent. So I really wanted to make it so that the demands on the players were almost non-existent. All they have to do is basically go to a URL on a website. They just have to open up a browser and don't have to do much of anything else. However, that means that the demands on me are a little bit greater because somebody has to host the whole thing. That is, mix the thing and either record it so they can, you know, watch back, see what they did, or stream it to Facebook and YouTube, which is what we've been doing every Friday night.
So everybody is playing and they've got various audio equipment, I take it. And are they doing it through Zoom? And are you mixing it, you know, listening through Zoom?
No, it's actually all done through a web browser. It's all done in Chrome, to be specific. It's just something I wrote just to take advantage of some new technology that allows peer-to-peer communication like Zoom. But there's stuff like that built into web browsers these days. They introduced it about 6 years ago, and it's just sort of coming into maturity. And we thought, well, let's try and do that. And there are ways you can use that to make the sound quality really, really good. So, you know, there's always technical issues with bandwidth, and we found some workarounds for that in order to make the audio quality as good as possible while sacrificing a bit of the video quality when necessary.
Wow. Is this something that you're going to patent?
Well, We're debating that right now. We might patent it, we might open source it, put it in the public domain. There's a vigorous debate going on about that. But originally, I called it, because it's a collaboration app, I called it Collabro, which is its official name. But I just kind of suggested that, well, if this were sort of a Cockney rhyming slang thing, we'd call it Kevin, or Kevin Collabro, the announcer for the Blazers. And that stuck. So now everyone calls it Kevin. And when I say everyone, I mean Ron.
Well, that is so exciting. So how many times have you used this? And how many concerts have been done, I guess?
We've done four so far. The first was Terry Riley's NC, which was, I guess, three Fridays ago. And that involved six locations and eight people. And the week after that, we did the Pyxis Quartet, Ron String Quartet. The week after that was Maria Garcia and Arlen Myers and James Shields doing Schubert and Schumann. The fourth concert, Martha Long playing flute in Portland, and Tim Hagen, who is a classmate of hers, who's in Chicago, playing flute duos.
Well, this is very exciting. So I'd like to bring Ron back in and talk about, is this going to be happening throughout the summer? What are the plans for the social distance ensemble?
Yeah, we have shows lined up for almost through the entire summer at this point, and no shortage of musicians who want to, you know, give it a shot and have some fun with this. I should also mention that we are asking for donations at each of the concerts and building kind of this new performance model, this new business model for performance where, yeah, you know, you come check it out and hear some really great music and some interesting combinations of players and programming, and then support us with donations. And thus far, that's proving to be very, very successful too. So, you know, at the end of the day, this isn't just about connecting players. This is about building a new way of presenting classical music to even wider audience. So yeah, we'll be doing it for the foreseeable future. This week is going to be a jazz trio. John Nastos, a wonderful sax player in Portland, and he has a colleague on the piano in his house in Portland, and then another colleague playing bass in Chicago. And so, you know, and we're talking with musicians and potential collaborators all over the world. So, you know, ultimately, that's, Danny may agree with me on this. It's one of the unexpected benefits of this platform. Here we were just trying to figure out how to play some string quartets. And now suddenly, you know, we realize how it opens up the entire world to us.
Yeah, I find that's sort of the more interesting aspects of, you know, this lockdown, is that more people are available from a lot of different locations. So you probably are being able to book a lot of great guest artists at this point.
Right. People who are really curious about the technology and want to be in on something really cool and innovative. And what's been interesting to me, there's a lot about this is really fascinating to me. One of the great things that I didn't realize or appreciate was, you know, throughout music history, there's always technological changes and musicians adapt to that and figure out ways of understanding the creative possibilities of new technologies. And that's exactly what we're seeing. You know, the performance last week with James and Arwen and Maria was really, really interesting, how they took this tool and made it work for them. And so I think Danny and I are both really excited moving forward how composers might understand the creative possibilities of this platform and run with it too. So, and that, I think that's a very exciting prospect.
Well, if you're getting donations, then it sounds like the response has been good.
Very good. Yeah. Well, you know, this is a time when everybody's wringing their hands and wondering what's next and if there's going to be a season at all next year. I mean, you know, this season's done, but already we're seeing news reports about major arts organizations elsewhere that are writing off the entire next year, and we are writing a different narrative. And it's partly the Friday night shows, but it's also other projects that we are available and flexible enough to pivot towards, you know, outdoor concerts in Portland public parks, for example. I'm fond of public parks, but that's, you know, these days the ideal social distance environment. And other ideas as well that are coming that we'll be presenting all year. So, at a time when everybody has their understandable challenges with the situation as performing arts organization, where we're embracing the opportunity to be creative.
Are you foreseeing being able to do any of the park performances?
Well, I might be getting ahead of myself a little bit here, but we're talking about it, and I expect that that will happen. I mean, you know, the parks have been available to people, and people are invited to go to the parks, and they should. I mean, the parks are wonderful, and maybe that's one of the silver linings of this whole sordid situation, is that a reacquainting with, you know, that wonderful Portland asset that we have in the public parks.
Well, just in listening to experts and reading, you know, all the data that's coming out, it does seem like the outdoors, if people are socially, you know, practicing social distance, there's more of a chance of being safe.
Right. Well, one of our taglines has always been, we embrace tradition even as we challenge its conventions. And that's exactly how we see this, as an opportunity to challenge conventions. And classical music has always had, that's a strong part of the tradition of classical music, is challenging things and thinking outside the box. And that's exactly what we're all about.
Well, Ron, you have been involved in organizations for a long time. So I ask you, from your experience, how this pandemic, how do you project it's going to affect or have an impact on the classical music community through the next year?
Oh, goodness. Well, the immediate impact was shocking and hard and really difficult. We got at the symphony, we got the news just days before we were doing this fabulous Rose Bond project with projected images up on the Schnitz, which, you know, particularly spoke to me because this is an, again, visual context, and I love that in classical music. But that was a tough moment to get that close to a wonderful project and not be able to do it, and then have the rest of the season gone. Then all the summer festivals are gone. Just from a freelance musician perspective, you know, that's tough. That's a lot of money and hits us all where we live. And then have all the other arts organizations cancel the summer. And now is, I've been most fearful about the fall and about the way that, you know, without getting into the politics and the way this is all being handled, you know, I'm fearful about what the fall will bring for a resurgence of the pandemic. And so, you know, we're all playing out a lot of different scenarios for how we're going to be active as artists, particularly next fall and next year. And who knows? I just, you know, I think we are bracing ourselves for the, you know, planning for the worst and hoping for the best.
Do you see that this pandemic will still have an effect on how we stage performances, how we, you know, interact with the audience? Is it giving, you know, some thought to that?
I think about that every time I hear an expert or a historian on the radio telling stories about the Spanish flu and how performance survived that, and the plague. I mean, theater survived all that. I mean, it like Alex Ross describes classical music as like Brigadoon. It always comes back. It will survive. As I've been struck by how much infrastructure has been based on close proximity of audience performers, you know, whether it's playhouses, theaters, or in our case, the Arlene Schnitzer Concert Hall. You know, this, we are not, architecture for performers, performing ensembles and performing organizations is pre-COVID for sure. And I don't know, it's going to be a really, really hard pivot. It's going to be wrenching, perhaps, and I don't know what the future really holds. But again, you know, we have really, really creative minds, and not just the people in the organizations too. It should be said that the community has been supportive of us and the symphony in particular, and everybody wants to see the orchestra back, and we'll do everything we can to make that happen.
And Danny, do you have any thoughts on that, as far as what the future of in-person live events might look like?
I don't, but I'm trying my best to find an alternative, which is why we're doing all these live streams in the first place. I certainly hope, I mean, it's my hope that we won't need this program after a while, because people will be able to congregate again, and then we'll be useful for things like distance performances, where people who want to play together but aren't in the same city can. But there's really no substitute for just being in the same room together. And I'm not just talking about a live performance. I'm just talking about two friends, anybody. It's so difficult to just be apart from everybody you know and love for this long of a period of time.
Well, we hope for the best. You can check out 45th Parallel's upcoming social distance concerts at 45thparallelpdx.org. I also have that link at kbu.fm/stageandstudio or stageandstudio.org, where you can hear a podcast of this show. Danny Rosenberg and Ron Blessinger of 45th Parallel, thank you for joining me today via Zoom on Stage and Studio. And I hope that more and more people attend your virtual concerts.
Thanks, Dime. It's my pleasure to be here.
Thank you very much.
We're going to hear more music from the Portland Social Distance Ensemble. Next up, we have excerpts of World Stage Theater's film Growing Up Black in Oregon. The country is still in turmoil about the murder of George Floyd on May 27th by a Minneapolis police officer. Days earlier, I got to watch a live stream of a film by World Stage Theater that's hosting conversations with local young people about what it's like to grow up black in Oregon. And I want to play some excerpts because I was really moved by that film and the conversation that also happened on Facebook Live for the virtual Vanport Mosaic Festival. Give a listen.
Hi, my name is Naya Inez Brown. I live in Vancouver, Washington right now. I used to live in Portland, Oregon, but we moved.
Hi, my name is Zahira Desfi, and I grew up in Portland and Fairview.
My name is Israel Hammond. I moved here from Charlotte, North Carolina during my junior year of high school.
I'm Lavella Johnson. I grew up in Northeast Portland. My family and I moved from Northeast Portland to the numbers when I was in about fourth grade, I would say.
My name is Lyric Lowe. I am 24 years old, and I was born and raised in Portland, Oregon.
Hey, everybody. It's Isaiah Sims. I grew up in Portland, Oregon, but then later on, we moved out into Troutdale, Oregon.
Hello, my name is Jay Sean Young. I'm 16 years old. I go to Grant High School. Born and raised in Portland, Oregon.
The first time I realized I was black was when I moved to Fairview Troutdale area. They were really nice. So the kids at my school were really nice and everything like that. But it was just, they looked at me like a wow, not like a what is this, but more like a, I don't think they realized, but it was definitely like a fascination, I would say.
I definitely first realized when I was black was when I went to school in Vancouver around third or fourth grade. And I started noticing, I was like, oh, why are the teachers treating me differently? That's not fair. Like, why does that one kid get to, like, do whatever they want? And if I do something, I get in trouble. Like, it didn't make sense to me. Didn't really make sense to me. And I was like, oh, I'm black. I'm brown. I'm different.
The first time I realized I was black, I guess when I looked at my skin, I guess I really don't know how to answer that question. I think when you're black, you know.
My neighborhood is very, like, kind of shallow. People here, they don't really talk to anyone. We're kind of like all antisocial, unless if you really know people in Vancouver, Washington. But if you come out here and you move out here from like a different state, it's not like nobody's gonna introduce themselves to you.
The neighborhoods here really started to show me what was really going on behind the scenes. And it was very frustrating because I thought that upon moving here, that there was a sense of ownership Portland was taking for, like, meeting the needs for diverse cultures and minority groups within Oregon and within Portland specifically. And so I was like, oh, I don't really think that that's true, though. Like, it sounds like it when I talk to different people, but when I, like, really look and see, like, what's going on, like, redlining and gentrification, I was like, oh, it's very interesting because I've moved 3 times since being in Portland.
Park Rose was a mixture of everything. When you first come on the block, you have apartments. That's where majority of the black people lived in the block, in those apartments. Then once you go up the street, you have wealthy people in the neighborhood, that which was majority white people.
We actually moved from Liberia to America as refugees. So for those of you who don't know where Liberia is, it's in West Africa, it's on the coast, and it's kind of close by like Ghana and stuff like that, and Guinea. We moved from Liberia because of the civil war that was going on at the time. I think it was the second or the third civil war. I'm not really sure, but it was a war. So we came as refugees. You know, growing up in a community where Africans were not really appreciated, so kids were really hurtful. Like, they would always taunt us. They'll say rude comments like, do you want 50 cents? Is that gonna help you eat? Like, it was just really toxic. It was really bad. But you know, there was also the sweet parts of elementary. Like, not the whole thing was like that. But, you know, I remember those things. And those things actually, you know, they're always gonna stick with me. It was really a rough time in my life.
I've experienced trauma growing up. I still experience some to this day. I was coming out of the store with my girlfriend, and this random white man was calling us the N-word, you know, just like, you know, making a joke about it, you know, seeing if we would react. That was last night. So I've had traumas from there to being stopped by police, all the incidents in school of the white students are in my classroom threatening to kill me. My freshman year of high school. I mean, it could go on and on, but I definitely say that just growing up here in Oregon, going to school here, is not really the easiest thing at all if you're a Black person.
You know, you have a city that's in the top left corner of an entire state. The whole population added up, there's only 5% of that number that is Black. And that, to me, It's kind of interesting, especially when I'm in situations where I do get to just see a sea of Black faces in Portland, which is very rare, very, very rare, but it still is something that exists. And so when I see a lot of Black faces in the same area, I get really excited because I'm like, oh, so like we are here. And it's like, yes, we are here. At the same time, just understanding that we are here. If we were to, you know, base it off of per capita, we're not really, really here. But it doesn't matter the number of people who are here. What matters is, what are we doing to stay a community? What are we doing to build relationships with each other? What are we doing to grow, to change, to evolve, and to stay united against whatever it is that we have to face as a culture and as a community group?
That was an excerpt of World Stage Theater's film Growing Up Black in Oregon. Vanport Mosaic's Facebook Live page, you can see it there, but you can also see it on YouTube. I have the links to the film as well as the live conversation event hosted by artistic director and founder of World Stage Theater, Shalonda Sims. So you'll get those links as well as today's podcast on stageandstudio.org or kbu.fm/stageandstudio. That's it for today. Like us on facebook.com/stage, the letter N, studio. Till next time, I'm Dimae Roberts. We're going out with music by 45th Parallel's Social Distance Concerts, and those are happening every Friday through the rest of the summer at 6 p.m.